Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast and the Doug Show. And today is going to be a different kind of episode. I'm obviously publishing this on both feeds out there. Number one, because I'm lazy, and if I have the opportunity to use the same content in two places, that's a great use of my time. And then the other different thing is the topic areas. So today, I have a very special guest. It is my brother-in-law, Sam. How are you today?
Great.
Good to have you in the studio. And today, we're going to talk about a couple actual finance topics. We weren't planning on it. I was just going to have a random episode where we shoot the shit and talk about food and cooking and other stuff that we would normally talk about. But along the way, we figured out there were actually a couple finance-related topics.
Yeah.
And it'll be around budgeting trips, because Sam, what are you doing here in my studio?
Yeah, I am on a trip. I do not live here in Colorado. I live in Virginia. This morning I got on an airplane and I made it over here. Yeah.
And we hung out. We could talk about what we did today in a second, but yeah, budgeting trips. And I was like, oh, I'm curious, like, how did you budget this trip? So we'll get some of the details. And then you also have a big trip with the family going to Iceland to see the total solar eclipse in a few months. This is a very popular time to travel there.
Yeah. Me and everyone else is going to Iceland that week.
Yeah. So that'll be interesting. And then the other segment is going to be about food and cooking, and we share an interest in that area. We'll spend time talking about pizza, which is a little related to what we did earlier today, coffee, barbecue and grilling, and just some other stuff, and whatever tangent we end up on. So as an actual question that could help guide this, have you ever listened to either one of my podcasts?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Both of them, I think.
A little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks. Yeah. And that's not just for the camera.
No. You know, okay. I'm not going to like inflate my listening, but yeah. You've listened to several episodes. Like, you've come on like while driving around in the car.
Oh, just naturally.
Yeah, just because the podcast app does what the podcast app does.
Oh, okay.
And I'm subscribed. So you'll come on after like the kids podcast or something. And then,
okay.
And then
cool.
The kids will say, is that Uncle Doug? Sure. Yes.
It's like, he doesn't cuss that much in person, which I cuss a little bit on the show. And then you may have, like, we were together a few weeks ago, and I don't cuss most of the, especially if kids are around, but like on the show and generally, like today I cussed a lot, right? Or did you even notice? You don't even hear it.
I think I caught one F-bomb.
Okay. You've learned to just tune. I mean, it just sounds natural. Okay.
Yeah. It does. Cussing does not bother me.
Yeah.
There's plenty of it in our household. Sorry, Christy.
Okay. So can you give a quick intro, as much as you're comfortable talking about, you know, we're not going to blur out your face unless you want to, but we can, but yeah, who are you? So people have an idea of your overall background and such like that.
Yeah, I'll keep it high level. I am a scientist, sort of professional type job that I'm lucky enough to be able to do from home, at least for the foreseeable future.
Okay.
I don't know.
You're a professional, you're a scientist.
Professional scientist.
Sounds like you like it enough.
I do.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right.
But I'm not financially independent.
Sure. You don't have to.
I haven't retired early.
Yeah. It's fine. Yeah. Many of the listeners.
I have a spreadsheet.
You know.
I have a plan. Yeah.
Oh, we haven't talked about it much. That's one of the, some people may think me, like I have a podcast talking about financial independence. I'm like, if people want to talk about it, I'll talk about it. But I'm not like, hey, I really need you to pay attention to this stuff. So we've literally not talked about it.
Yeah.
So we're not going to talk about it now. We're going to talk about other shit.
It's great.
Okay. So you're on this trip and pretty cool. You're going to hang out with some friends. Tell us about that.
Yeah. This is a guy's trip with my college buddies. We try to get together semi-regularly, but it's been, like we talked about, like 7 years since there's six of us. The six of us were all in the same place at the same time. yeah, sometimes we try to get the families together. This time it's boys only.
Right.
We landed in Denver because I asked ChatGPT what the most inconvenient city for all of us. we live, you know, spread across the country.
Yeah.
And it turns out Denver's actually a very convenient city. Like direct flights for everybody and plenty to do. And
yeah,
looking forward to it. So I flew in a couple days early to see you and some other friends that live here. And
nice.
That's why I'm here.
And one of the big things that you're going to do, which I recommended, is check out Casa Bonita. So you guys will be going there.
That's right. I texted you back in like January when we were first kicking around the idea. And I was like, what are your top recommendations? And you responded, I think within like 10 seconds, Casa Bonita. So, okay. I'll put that on the list.
Yeah. And I mean, I was like, I'm a fan of South Park and I saw it back then. And I was like, make sure most of your crew is South Park fans and we'll give a shit. Otherwise, it's just like an okay restaurant. Your kids would like, you could take kids there and they would have a blast. But it's also for kids at heart, like all y'all, because you're in your early 40s. Is that basically everybody?
Yeah. I mean, we all met in our freshman year dorm. So we're all exactly the same age, like within a couple of months of each other.
Okay.
We're all 42.
Cool.
Which is the answer to life, the universe,
and
everything.
And yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool. And this is one of the themes that we talk about sometimes on the show, where especially men roughly our age, 5 years older than you. And yeah, basically it's like, it's good to go away from the family, like go hang out, keep the relationships active, because it's super easy for 7 years to go by.
COVID happened in the middle of that, but yes.
It's true.
Yes.
Yeah. And it takes effort and all that kind of stuff, which, and also money, which brings us to when we were walking around. We'll tell you why we were walking around in a few minutes, but we were walking around and I'm like, oh, how did you budget for this trip? You know, there's a flight, you have food, you guys got a fairly large Airbnb to have all six of y'all. You have a big day at Casa Bonita. You're probably going to buy some expensive Colorado beers and whatever. So how does one budget in the scope of the family and all that stuff?
Yeah. I don't know how interesting this is going to be, because the answer is not very much at all. Like, luckily we're in a position where a few hundred bucks or a few thousand bucks isn't going to make or break much, especially because we didn't really go anywhere last year. I didn't have a very big trip year last year. So this trip and then Iceland coming up, not a big deal. Also, we used miles for the flight. So we have credit card, you know.
Yeah.
We do the credit card thing, and every once in a while it's like, hey, we have enough to go somewhere.
For the credit card points, did you get like the big sign up bonus for United, or it was just like you have Chase points or something like that and you could, you know, you moved them to another?
Yeah, this was, I think we used Amex, or I used Amex for this trip. Yeah, that's just like regular accrual. We don't do, I don't like jump credit cards every 3 months to chase sign up bonuses and stuff like that. We have a credit card that we use for groceries and restaurants that get whatever multiple seem good. And then another that we use for everything else. And we charge everything, like absolutely everything.
Yeah.
Paid off every month. And then, yeah, like I said, every once in a while, we're like, hey, that's worth a hotel room or a flight or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And we were more similar. Like, we do largely simplify and just have like one card where I think it's between 3% and 4% cash back. And we just use that because of the simplicity. And because some people are like, four restaurants, use this. When we get gas at Costco, use that.
Yeah,
and it's certainly manageable, but for me right now is not interesting or exciting. Some people really do enjoy it, but I do not at all.
When I was in grad school, we had very little money. And Christy was also, she switched careers. If you can call switching careers out of the first thing you do out of college, switching careers. But she had to go back to school and get another degree, and it is a different career. Okay, so she wasn't bringing in any income either. And so like optimizing a small amount of money felt more worthwhile at that point. And so I did try to optimize things a little bit better before. Now, like I said, like we're fine. And so the benefit of spending the time to chase down a percentage point or two isn't really worth it anymore.
Yeah, totally, totally agree. And I have dabbled with credit cards that have the big sign-up bonus, and that is worthwhile. Occasionally, it's very good. So like a year ago, I signed up for the Chase Sapphire Preferred, maybe $1,000 bonus. Elizabeth could sign up for it also. Mm-hmm. And she did. So that was like $2,000. And like, to your point, we just did normal spending. It was well within whatever we would hit in 3 months or whatever.
Yeah.
So it was fine. And then I did it for IHG, which we recently were on a trip together with a family, and we were at a super, you know, high class hotel, the Holiday Inn Express.
Yeah, I noticed you picked up the hotel rooms for everybody. Thank you.
You're welcome. Right by, I wanted it to be easy access. So it was 100 feet from the fucking interstate. It was so close to the cars. I can't believe it.
The text you sent was hilarious. I don't know. Do you remember what you said?
No,
I don't. Okay. So I think you got there the night before everyone else did. And you sent a text to the family group chat that was like, the hotel is great if you like being so close to the interstate, you can feel it.
And you could. You literally could feel it. And side note, so you guys rented a car and, you know, we drove around. We're from Atlanta. We went to school in the city. Like, we're used to traffic. It's another famous city with bad traffic. Dallas, big sprawl, huge city, beautiful, good food, blah, blah, blah. Who designed the highways there? It's hard to drive, man.
They did not hire great civil engineers. I don't know where they got those plans from, but holy crap.
It takes a second. Like, you recalibrate, and I had traveled and driven there before, but like many places, traffic is worse than it was back then. People drive fast, and there's a lot of people, and the major issue is the access roads next to the highways and the merging, and it's hard.
It's not intuitive. So you drive, some places have, we can talk about engineering principles, right? And like human factors. Like,
yeah.
Some places the roads are designed, the exit, the signage is good. Like, it's intuitive to get where you need to go. Like, even if you didn't have Google Maps telling you exactly, like, you could probably figure it out. I need to go east. I know what interstate I need to hit, whatever. Dallas was not like that. You need to know to get off the interstate 3 miles prior to when the actual exit is. There's zero merge lanes. You're expected to just like merge going 65 miles an hour, I guess, and hope for the best. I don't know. Yeah. My biggest issue was that it was not intuitive.
Perfectly stated. And that is the thing. Like, it was a little confusing. You kind of could get better at understanding the layouts, but at the end of the day, like, you kind of had to know where you were going a mile or two before you had to turn.
Yeah.
And again, like many other places, Dallas is not unique in this. There's construction everywhere. So it's just like, things aren't quite right. Yeah. And one issue, I love to alienate the audience. So most people are like, oh, we don't give a shit about the traffic in general, but let alone Dallas specifically.
It's also really boring to hear somebody complain about traffic. Like, it's a unique experience.
Yeah. So the few people in Dallas understand this, but we can move on. Thank you for this one. No one wants to hear you complain. The hotel was fine right next to the interstate. So it was actually easy to get on the interstate when we needed to.
Yeah.
So that was nice.
Unless, I don't know if you did this, you went out the wrong side of the parking lot.
Yeah.
One side of the parking lot, you could hit the ramp. The other side, you were stuck on the access road for another mile.
We almost did that same thing. And again, silly thing, but that, I don't know how it was in your car, but sometimes you need like a navigator position, and it's like, hey, wait a second, are you going out the wrong exit from here? And we're like, hey, wait a second, you got to go over there to the taqueria mm-hmm. parking lot to get out. So, okay. So getting those sign-up bonuses are sometimes. It's pretty worthwhile.
Yeah, yeah. And every once in a while, I look and we switch credit cards every once in a while whenever the mood strikes.
Yeah, I think we're maybe like once a year. It's not a huge hassle, but it's also, unless it's a really good bonus, it's just not worth it to me. And like you said, some people, it's like very valuable. They can take all their vacations on that.
So. Yeah, more power to them. I wish I had the time and inclination to chase those things down. Every once in a while, I'm like, I could optimize this better.
Yeah.
I feel the same way about all of our finances. I'm like, this could be better.
So let's talk about the Iceland trip. You are heading out in August and just kind of tell us the overall plan and then we'll get into some of the details.
Sure. So there was a total solar eclipse across much of the US 2 years ago.
Yep. 2024 in April.
Yeah. So I had to travel for work that day. I was like, where I was, we all went out and like looked at it through the glasses and stuff. It was nice. Yeah. Christy also had to work that day. And so the kids went to school and went to their normal after school. But everyone had been talking about it. Like they learned about solar eclipses in school and like, oh boy, the solar eclipse is coming kind of stuff. And then we found out that they didn't take the kids out to look at it. Because like
liability.
Yeah. Right. And so totally makes sense. But the kids were super disappointed. And so we looked up like, all right, well, like what's the next solar eclipse that we could conceivably get to? And it's this one coming up. It's hitting Iceland and like the western portion of like Spain and Portugal, I think. And so we're like, a big family trip could be fun. Christy and I went to Spain a few years ago, more than a few years ago now that I think about it. But we're like, Iceland. How cool would it be to see a total solar eclipse in Iceland? So we're like, all right, mark it on the calendar a year out, start planning and booking. Of course, we are not the only ones to think that seeing a total solar eclipse in Iceland would be a cool thing. As we started like putting it together, we're realizing that like we're probably paying, I don't know, 8 to 10 times the amount that we would go just like on a random June week. And so, yeah, there have been conversations like, is this worth it to like make the kids happy? Is this going to be like such a significant like family experience and memory that it's worth spending like so much extra money to make it happen? And yeah, like I think at the end of the day, like spending money on experiences has been a lot more valuable than spending money on things. I like spending money on things too, though.
A good balance between the two. Yeah. And yeah, super cool. I mean, if you're able to see the eclipse, because the weather is always, no matter where you go, it's tough.
So there's only like, I think a 50%, like cloud cover is like 50%-ish that time of year in Iceland. So like right off the bat, it's a huge question mark. And then finding a place to stay within the path of totality was just like totally outside of our budget. Just like insane numbers for a night. And so we're not staying in the path of totality, which means we're going to have to drive. And there's only one road in Iceland.
Yeah.
And so I'm also thinking like, what if we just get stuck in traffic like 2 hours away from the eclipse and everyone 2 hours in front of us can see it just fine, but we're just like stuck. That's like a nightmare scenario for me.
Yeah. Obviously you have time to think of solutions for that, but I mean, that's a tough solution with one road and such a limited space. Like, is there anything that you can do aside, like have some snacks, water and some kind of pee bucket?
The best I can come up with is get up at like 2 a.m. and try to beat other people.
It will be, bright enough at that time of day.
Yeah, it should be. Yeah. The eclipse isn't until the afternoon, like 4 p.m. or so. So I'm like, All right, if we get there 14 hours ahead of time, maybe we'll be able to see it.
Get a cooler and just have all your food there. We were some of the people that were telling you, hey, check out the eclipse. We probably told you like a couple years ahead of time because we saw it. We're lucky enough to have seen it twice, 2017. And then we were like, this was so awesome. We definitely need to try to do it again. And I was like, oh, 7 years later. So mark the calendar. So the first time we saw it in Idaho Springs, Idaho, which was a few hours from Bozeman where we were living at the time. And it's like indescribable. And I know that you have seen even up to 99%. You've seen other partial eclipses,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Many people are like, yeah, I saw it. It got a little dark. Like maybe you saw some funny shadows as the sun was filtering through a tree or whatever. Yeah. So kind of interesting, but whatever. But when you see the total eclipse, it's like, again, indescribable.
Yeah.
So I won't be able to describe it well, but a hush like falls over the crowd. You get chills. I mean, it's sort of life-changing, one of those things. And it was the second time as well. Yeah. So I, you know, good luck with the cloud cover, because obviously you can't control the weather, so you never know. And we got super lucky to have like just perfect blue skies on those particular days. So
yeah, great. Yeah. I mean, money aside, I think it's gonna be a great trip.
Yeah, what else do you guys have planned?
All the regular stuff, mm-hmm. I guess. I'm gonna do the snorkeling thing between the continental plates, and I'm not going to even try to pronounce the name of the national park that you do that in. Just me though. The kids are too young to do it.
Okay.
So Christy was like, hey, that you want to do that? Like, I'll take the kids to go see a geyser or something and you can go do that. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Cool.
Yeah. Geysers, hot springs, beaches.
A lot of volcanic geological kind of stuff, right?
Waterfalls and puffins and stuff.
Are the kids into that stuff? Are they like learning about it in school and they like can understand conceptually like what they're going to go do?
Yeah. Yeah. Myra for sure.
Okay.
She's 10. Yeah.
She gets it.
She gets it. My son is, how old is he? He's 6.5. I never really understand like how much he's internalizing, mm-hmm. but then he always surprises me with stuff. So I think he probably gets a lot of it too.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, obviously I can't remember how much I understood at six or whatever. I feel like I kind of had some understanding, but I'm sure I had no clue at all about much.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't take much to understand a waterfall. So
he gets that.
He'll get that. But like the reason that that waterfall is here in this place and why that's kind of neat. Maybe not.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And are you guys able to get like a direct flight? Talk about the travel. Is that going to be a tough? Okay.
Yeah. Also can't afford direct flights. So we're doing like weird layovers in Copenhagen. So yeah, I think we're flying out Wednesday evening, arriving in Europe Thursday morning. And then we have like not a terrible layover before hopping over to Iceland. Mm-hmm. And then sort of the same, although kind of worse on the way back. our flights got changed. We had picked things out and made plans. And then the airline sent us an email that was like, yeah, we're changing all that. Tough nuts. You can contact us, I guess, if you don't like it. And we were like, we don't like this. Like, you've cut our vacation like 2 days short.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So we ended up extending the trip for a day because we felt like that was better.
If you're already over there.
You're already there, yeah. But it means we're flying out at like 1 o'clock in the morning. So we're not even getting a hotel room that night.
That's a rough one.
Not exactly sure what we're going to do.
Oh, man. Yeah, that is tough. Oh, you guys will have a fine time. I was going to say.
It'll be fine. It'll be a story.
To you. So you mentioned that you didn't take a big trip last year, and this trip will be a lot. Are you able to share like the general scope, like tens of thousands of dollars,
yeah.
kind of.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And how are, do you have like a budget line item? So back to the budgeting idea, do you have like a budget line item in your spreadsheet? You're like, annually, we usually spend about this in travel. So you're like, this kind of fits in there if we take into account the trip that we didn't take last year.
If you amortize it.
Yeah. yeah. yep. So how do you justify this?
yeah, a little bit of that.
Okay.
We don't have like a travel budget. We have like a fun fund. So our finances are like totally blended. Mm-hmm. We don't keep separate pots of like, this is my money and this is Christy's money or anything like that. It's just one family pot, but there's like the needs, the wants, and then like the really frivolous. And
okay.
And so like money gets dumped into the frivolous account. Travel ends up being a little of want and a little of like depending on
right.
what it's going to be.
And that makes sense. I mean, we have a travel line item, but I think what you're saying totally makes sense, where it's like everyone needs to have some recreation and leisure time. So maybe the want part, technically you wouldn't have to do the leisure stuff, but you would at least like go camping or have like some little trip, even if the scope is much smaller. And then the frivolous part can grow indefinitely. Yeah. That's one of the great things with travel.
Yeah.
Again, there's no top,
there's no upper limit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you view it that way. And then from an overall budget, so you guys have a blended, it's just one family budget and checking account and credit cards that you share, whatever. From the percentage, like, did you guys work on that together where you're like, hey, this is roughly what we spend? How did you come up with this?
No, Christy has like zero interest in it. So I handle it all. I used to sit down with her and like go through it with her.
Like a family finance meeting.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But she was never interested in it. And she was just like, I trust what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Looks fine. And so we stopped doing that.
Okay.
And that's fine because
yeah,
I don't have a gambling addiction or anything.
Yeah, yeah. It works out. You're pretty smart. You could use a spreadsheet. It
feels like it's working. Like I said, it could probably be optimized a little bit better, but yeah.
Sure.
It's fine. And occasionally she'll ask like, how much money is in that fund? I'm like, well, you could go look. Like it's not hidden.
Yeah. Yeah. And Elizabeth kind of got me more involved because I was I didn't pay too much attention and I'm more of a spender. Although, I mean, I saved fine-ish, but I don't love budgeting and that sort of thing. So like technically Elizabeth has could have taken over and I probably would have been like, okay, but I have a light interest and I do have opinions. So there's definitely like friction, and the more sort of like conservative she is, the more I move in the other direction so that we pull each other in the opposite direction, which is not always good, but we've learned to we've met in the middle. So it works out.
Yeah. I mean, so our budget is informed by conversations we've had about like what our priorities are. And so we save aggressively because neither of us, I think, want to work forever. But we both like got a late start. Like I went to grad school and then a postdoc. And like, so like I didn't start making like actual grown up money until I was I was 32 or something. Mm. Yeah, like we already said, Christy switched careers. And she switched careers into a career that isn't super high paying. So yeah, so we felt like we needed to play some catch up on the savings front. And so our budget's informed by that. We save aggressively. And then whatever's left over, I really just like track our historical spending for the different categories. And then if something like seems wildly off, I'm like, hey, what's going on with our grocery budget or whatever it is?
Yeah, gotcha. And it's really cool because you were like, I think we're going to be done with this in 10 minutes, but here we are. Like we're digging into some details. Do you know your savings rate? Mm-hmm. Are you willing to share the savings? Like, you could tell us. You don't have to. You could give us a range if you want to be more private.
It's over 20%.
Okay.
Just over 20%.
Nice. That's the kind of, I mean, people like those kind of details. Yeah. So, and you guys have two kids, and like you said, you kind of were slower to get started and make big boy money, I guess. Doing it. Very cool. Yeah. Well, and the funny thing is, like, I have no clue.
I still don't make a lot of money.
I have no clue. Grad student makes. I have no idea how much we saved. I have no idea of savings rates. Like, although you've seen all the houses that I've lived in and wherever we mm-hmm. have been, we basically kind of locked in on an expense area and then just kind of like did not, as our income went up, we did not change that. We mm-hmm. over time, housing costs got a little more expensive, but since we're 5 years older, even though both Elizabeth and I bought houses that were upside down and mm-hmm. horrible to buy in 2005 when we each bought, it worked out okay. Obviously, it worked out okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, over 20%, solid. Very good.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
Okay. Anything else finance related before we shift into cooking and food and some of the projects and things we bought? No?
Cool. Nah.
All right. So one of the things I end up talking to people about all the time is just like food partially is like, I'm hungry and yeah. I'm thinking about the next meal. And one thing we did today is we did like a pizza crawl kind of thing. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of good pizza places here in Longmont. Mm-hmm. And we went to three different places, different styles. And I filled you up. Basically, you were like, I can't eat anymore.
Yeah.
So I'll let you, do you remember the names of the places we went? Okay. So first place we went is Urban Field. We'll call it Urban Field, Detroit style. And that's what we got there. We didn't talk about this beforehand, but can you rate it between 1 and 10? Or what were you going to say? Go ahead.
I mean, so the problem in quotes here with the first place is that we got a very untraditional pizza there.
We did. Yeah.
We got like a...
It was like Carnitas
Street Taco Pizza
or
something like that. So I don't know how to rate that.
Sure.
Really. It was good, but it's hard to stack up against like the other places, which were where we did get with like...
Traditional.
We got a pepperoni pizza at the other two places.
Yeah. But it was good.
Yeah, it was good. It was just fine. I would have been perfectly happy with it if we hadn't gone to... two other places right afterwards. Yeah. Like, oh, I like these better.
Yep. And I will say, I do enjoy a pan pizza like that. Mm-hmm. We're saying, you know, I grew up eating like Pizza Hut and still like it. I mean, I am a simple person and I can appreciate Pizza Hut.
Yeah. What's the saying about pizza and sex?
It's like I'm just trying to think of something funnier to say that I wanted to mess it up, but even bad pizza is still pretty good.
Pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I'm like good ingredients. So I would recommend if you like Detroit style, check it out. It's pretty good. Yeah. Then we walked up the street to Antonio's Pizza, which is New York style. So the next two places we got New York style and we got a pepperoni. Mm-hmm. We had something with, it was like some sausage, like an Italian, I don't know the name of the sausage on there, or it was like a pepperoni type, but it also had balsamic and some.
Yeah. I thought it was like a margarita pizza with like extra balsamic. So,
there was this,
I didn't pay too much attention.
Yeah.
I was just shoving it down my throat.
They need to have the names of, cause I was like, I'll have that one. And then the pepperoni, and then the other one, which was another like street taco.
We had two street taco pizzas today. Yeah.
And it was like some corn on there. It was pretty good. Anyway, pizza there, super good, like a traditional sort of New York style. And I thought it was great. I mean, I've been like three times in the last month or something like that. So really good.
Yeah.
Then we continued on up the street there and went to Rosalie's, which has been there for a fairly long time. And it was, again, another New York style. And what did you think of that one?
I thought it was great. That was my favorite of the day. The cheese was good. The crust was good. Nice chew. And then as we talked about, like the leoparding on the bottom, it's pretentious.
Yeah.
But like, you know, it's got like the black and white spots because it yes. chars a little bit on the bottom. And that tastes really good to me.
Yeah.
I also like when you burn steak a little bit on the grill, yeah. like the charred bits are the good yeah. bits to me.
And obviously you don't want all of it to be burned with the leoparding, but just a little bit.
Just the right amount.
It gives a contrast of the two. And the like you said, the flavor is a good thing.
Yeah.
The little char and yeah. And at the end, both of us were like, Rosalie's like this New York style pizza is clearly better. Like mm-hmm. there's, I mean, again, Antonio's super good, but I was like, oh shit, Rosalie's, it's been a while since I've been there.
Yeah. Maybe it's not better. Maybe it's just the one that we each preferred. I can definitely see how someone will be like, that pizza's burned. I don't want that.
Sure. Yeah. We're not pizza experts. We're just enthusiasts.
I'm a pizza expert. You are. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So the other thing we were talking about, and one of the recent purchases I made, because occasionally I'll watch food content on YouTube, and then there's been this pizza guy on there and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I got inspired to get a pizza steel. So it's a carbon steel, like heavy mm-hmm. instead of a stone. So the stones were really popular maybe 20 years ago, and I've had a couple of them. I've used one on the grill, which I think a stone probably is the best thing to use if you have a super hot heat source and you're at 900 degrees. So a grill can get that hot. Oven, not so much. Yeah. I'm kind of locked in. I think ours goes up to, I think it only goes to 500, but it does have some convection feature.
Most of them are 500. I've seen, it's like a big deal when they advertise it goes up to like 550.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little extra. So ours is about 500, and I have been slightly struggling with the pizza. So I'm not like trying to recreate anything. I'm not trying to make it perfect or anything like that. But I'm like, this is just not as done. Like I end up having to cook it much longer than expected. So probably maybe three times in the last year, I've got the pizza out. I'm like, all right, bottom looks good. Like this looks okay. And then I'm like, oh, in the middle, and I'm not like totally covering it with toppings or anything. I'm like, it's a little not quite done in the middle. And I'm like, it's so disappointing because I'm like already cut the pizza I got to throw it back in for a minute. So,
again, I'm not a pizza expert, but we had this experience. We used to live in a little town in Pennsylvania that had like seven pizza shops for some reason. There was nothing else there, but there were so many pizza places. Our favorite did like they had a wood fired grill, but only the small pizzas like got cooked to the right amount. Like a big, it doesn't seem to make any sense.
Right.
Like the thickness of the pizza is the same, whether it's a 12 inch or a 16 inch, but the 16 inches weren't done. And so we got into the habit of ordering like multiple small pizzas. Maybe just make your pizzas smaller.
I have been making them a little bit bigger. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
And so I watched a handful of YouTube videos, and then whatever fucking ads start showing up, like getting in my face, reminding me about the stuff that I kind of looked at. And I was like, oh, you know what? This does make sense. For the people that don't cook, the stone, it doesn't conduct the heat as well. And the steel is much more dense. I mean, whatever I ended up getting a 16 by 16, 3/8 inch thick. It weighs like 30 fucking pounds. Mm-hmm. The stone weighs like 2 pounds or whatever. Yeah, yeah. So it's holding all this heat, and it should transfer the heat much more effectively. Even if it's, you know, the 500 degrees, or maybe I have to put it at 450 because there's so much heat.
Yeah,
I would
worry
stone.
About burning.
That's... So I wait to buy things for a long time, and I haven't gotten like any new cooking implement in a while. I've been making more pizzas and dough and stuff like that, and I'm like, I can get it. It wasn't too expensive. I think it was like $100.
Yeah.
So, and I can't remember. Do you guys have a steel or you use a cooking stone?
Cooking stone. We have Christy bakes a ton.
Yeah.
A ton. So we have multiple stones. That doesn't even matter because most of our pizzas we do outside on the grill.
Okay.
Where there's also a stone.
All right. Well, let's talk about your grill and what you're, oh yeah. Ask me more.
So you mentioned that you had bought this steel earlier, but I didn't ask any follow-up questions because I knew we were doing this.
Yeah.
I don't actually know the answer. Do you have it or you have just ordered it?
I've ordered it. So it should be here in a couple days.
Okay. So you haven't played with it yet?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think Elizabeth is going to be like, what is in the oven? And you have to help me move it. And it's too heavy because it will take longer. I mean, Elizabeth bakes a lot also, not as much as Christy, but like she bakes quite a bit and it will potentially interfere with some things that she's dialed in. I think she would just like have to let it heat up longer, but it definitely will be a heat sink in the oven. Once it's hot, it will also keep the oven hot for much longer.
Yes. It probably will change things. Yeah. Our pizza stone, baking stone, whatever, it lives in the oven.
Yeah.
100% of the time. But there are recipes where like you need to change the temperature rapidly.
Oh, so, yeah. So not going to be able to do that. And I briefly looked at some cast iron. Because I like cast iron. I don't know if you saw, and I don't know if I've talked about it on the show. So I have a couple like Lodge cast iron. I have a couple Wagner, some like antique stuff. But a couple years ago, I was like, I think I would like to have like a very large skillet. So I got like a 13.5 or 14 inch skillet. And it is great. Like I tend to cook large volumes of food. However, it is like huge and heavy and I think it must weigh 25 pounds or something like that. So it pretty much like lives on the stove. And if I had to move it somewhere, it's like, I need to like put it on a shelf in the garage or something that. So that is a little bit of an issue. And to the point of like having the new steel, I think I probably will need to be like, hey, do you want me to just like move it out of here? Because this is going to make an issue of turning on the oven every single time.
Yeah. You might need to like figure out some pallet jack or something that she can move around.
Yeah. But I'm looking forward to it. And the punchline with the cast iron, they do have like some Lodge cast iron pizza pans or whatever, but cast iron is not as dense as the carbon steel. Yeah. So like it's better than a stone, but not as good as the steel. And I'm like, I may as well just go straight to the steel.
Yeah. Go big or go home, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see how it goes. I'm looking forward to getting it, like doing some pizzas. I will try the smaller idea and just see how it goes.
Somebody who knows thermodynamics more than me can comment.
It's a very smart audience. Anyone out there, feel free to comment or send us an email to let us know.
On my empirical assessment of pizza from one pizza place.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's just like the mass of it on there.
It could be,
I don't know. It could be like, we're assuming the heat on the stone is, or on the steel is even or whatever, but it might not be, right?
Yeah.
So maybe the middle's hotter or I don't know. Anyway, we don't want to think too hard about it. It's like doing math.
That's
on
not
the
what
air.
I'm here for.
Yeah. Okay. So you do your pizzas on the grill, and what are you cooking with these days? You could tell us the brand and the size and whatever details.
Yeah, I have an S&S Kamado, which is a ceramic. Kamado is the style of cooker. So like Big Green Egg or what's the red one?
Yeah,
Kamado Joe.
Oh,
those are the big brands, but it's like that. It's just a smaller brand of ceramic cooker. I really like it. I think it's like a jack of all trades kind of tool. So I can smoke like big pieces of meat on it. I don't think it makes as good a barbecue as like a dedicated smoker, but then I don't have to own a dedicated smoker. And then I can do, like high heat grilling on it. It's probably not as good as like a dedicated grill for that. But then I don't need like another grill and like down the line. So like pizza, like I can do pizza on it and pizza turns out good. Maybe not as good as a dedicated pizza oven, but then I don't have to have a pizza oven out there. So it's a single tool that I really like.
Yeah. Okay. Why'd you pick that one over like a Green Egg or some of, again, there's a lot of different brands out there.
Yeah. Partially, mostly it was the price point. I don't know what they're going for these days, but when I bought it a decade ago, I think it was a decade ago, it was significantly cheaper. So okay. Like the same size, similar number of accessories. They also have some, they had a different idea about where to put the fire in the firebox. This is really getting in the weeds that I thought made sense. I don't know if it does or not, mm-hmm. but I cook with it and it like does a great job. So I'm happy with how it turns out.
So is it like it to allow you to have like indirect heat more easily or something, or like where did they put the...
Yeah. So in most of the Kamado grills, you light the fire in the bottom of the thing, mm-hmm. right? And so the fire is under the food and you don't have a great way to like do multi-zone cooking. Mm-hmm. That has since changed from what I understand. They're constantly coming up with different accessories to sell you and
yeah,
different like firebox dividers are included in that. But mine, they had this idea where the fire would go like almost in the middle of the grill. So it's like, it's raised up from the bottom and it's in its own little
okay.
container over to the side. And so the meat for like smoking at least is almost at the same level as the fire. It's just over to the side. And the idea, and I don't know if this is true or not, is that the smoke and the heat is like rolling off the fire and over onto the meat.
So you get some like convection and type so action.
Yeah, that's the idea at least. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. But like I said, I can do like nice things with it. So sure, it works for me.
Seems fine. Yeah. Gotcha.
So yeah. That's what I do the pizza on.
And then you just like load it up with charcoal and there's a stone on there. Whatever.
Yeah. So when I do pizza, I don't use that. I don't put the fire in that raised firebox thing. I just build it in the bottom like you
okay.
normally would. And I put a shit ton of charcoal in it.
Okay. And then you, like what temp can you get it up to or what's your target that you're aiming for?
It can peg the needle, which is at 900. I think that's too hot, but so we're usually aiming for like 750 maybe.
Okay. 750.
Seems to be a good sweet spot.
And then do you close it all the way when it's cooking? Do you have to rotate it around or?
Yeah. So some of the other brands have these like, this like pie shaped accessory mm-hmm. where it keeps the lid cracked a little bit and then you can use it like a pizza oven.
Yeah.
Like get the steel in it. I don't have that. So yeah, we just raise the lid, throw the pizza on, close it, wait 90 seconds ish, maybe a little longer, and then usually take it off. The first one will be like a little bit of a tester. Mm. Sometimes there's more heat on one side than the other, and we have to like okay, well, like I'm gonna have to rotate these halfway through or whatever.
Gotcha.
It also changes over the cook. We're usually impatient. And like, I try to, I'm like, all right, it's pizza night. So when we do pizza nights, we usually make a lot. Cause it's like we were talking about earlier, like you feel bad, like wasting all that heat.
Yeah.
Even though like whatever, but like I had this thing lit up to 750, 800 degrees. I don't want to waste it. So we end up making like a lot of pizza.
Yeah.
Maybe six or eight pizzas. The ones at the end are always better than the ones at the beginning. I don't know. The fire's more mature. It's like hit, like everything's yeah. seasoned and like hit like steady state and temperatures or whatever it is. And so I'm always like, okay, I need to give myself more time. So I'm going to start grilling at 6. I'll start the grill at 4. But no matter how much time I give myself.
It's never enough.
It's never enough. The pizzas at the end are always better than the pizzas at the beginning.
So the kids get the early one.
So you're managing it.
Yeah.
Like, okay, the first ones took 90 seconds. The ones at the end, usually they go faster.
Okay. That makes sense. And yeah, it makes sense. Like the whole grill, the lid, everything is hotter. So it's like radiating heat more evenly.
Yeah.
That's cool. Okay. And then, yeah, I was going to ask, like, you're making like 6 to 8. So you have a few, you got plenty of leftovers. How big are these pizzas? Or these are like 12 inch or something like that.
What do you think that is? Probably 12 inch.
12, okay. 12, so 13. Kind of smaller.
Yeah.
So not super crazy. And then since Christy is the baker, so she does the dough. Do you know any details of the dough, or she just gets it going?
I know her favorite, her current favorite pizza recipe book is from a guy named Peter Reinhardt.
Okay.
And he's got, I think he has more than one pizza book. And I think we have more than, I think we have them. There's a couple recipes in there that I know that she likes to use. But they do vary. So yeah, usually she makes the dough, and I'm the stereotypical guy outside dealing with the fire. But sometimes I make the dough. And the last time we did it, I made the dough out of that Peter Reinhardt book, and I picked the like super thin, like super, like there's one that's called like super thin. I picked that one, and it was super thin.
Oh, wow.
Nice. And it was a little hard to handle, but turned out great. So
nice.
Good job, Peter Reinhardt, on your pizza recipes.
Very good.
Gosh, I hope it's Peter Reinhardt, not Anthony Reinhardt or something.
That's fine. Someone will tell us. Yeah, that's cool. And I should probably, like we were chatting earlier, I have basically just been like making dough from, I don't know how to describe it. I just throw the four ingredients together that are required.
Intuitive.
Intuitive, that's right. Yeah. Thank you. Intuitive. Intuitive dough making, and it works fine. It always works out fine. Like I've made a lot of dough and bread, so I'm like, I can see when it's coming together and the gluten and blah, blah, blah. And if I don't get enough gluten development, then I do. I mean, it's kind of a mess later. Yeah. So like, I understand what I'm doing, but it will be better if I go back to the right way to do it, which is like use a scale, use the gram scale, and like make sure you kind of know what you're doing. So when I get my pizza steel, I will measure shit out and like try to be a little more consistent.
Yeah. I think where it's really useful is once you like dial in something that works, if you have written it down,
it's repeatable.
Then. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it should be fine. I always end up with pizza and it's pretty good. And
yeah, it's always
fine. Good. Yeah. And you can tell it's homemade. And I mean, a lot of times I'm doing like a multi-day like fridge fermentation. So like it tastes really good, even if it's not quite exactly consistent all the time. Because sometimes, like, I mean, really, it's best if you make the dough like 3 days ahead of time. And it's like, are you guys planning that far ahead? Maybe. Okay.
So every once in a while, we'll like, yeah, let's make pizza this weekend and get on top of it. But no, usually not.
So one thing I want to talk about is coffee. So you're an avid coffee enthusiast. I am too. I got into it more in the past. I've kind of lightened up a bit. But what kind of coffee stuff do you have going on?
I've never tried to describe myself, but like an avid
caffeine fiend,
amateur,
avid.
Yeah, yeah. Although I was a barista in college for 6 months or so.
Okay,
yeah.
So you kind of know what you're doing.
Yeah, that's probably where like I started being interested in it, because that coffee shop actually sent us to. Like the roaster taught us how to taste coffee, and like, why? Why were they sending
your college
20-year-olds to like, yeah, what amounts to like, you know, coffee school? But very cool, very, very interesting. So I've sort of always had an interest in coffee ever since then. Right now, I have a home espresso set up. I have a bunch of different coffee makers, not like an insane number, but I make French press most mornings. So I use that. I have a mocha pot. I have an AeroPress. I have a couple other ones that aren't springing directly to mind. Yeah, there's a cabinet.
Some kind of pour over thing.
Yeah. Pour a V60. Yeah. Couple pour overs.
Okay. So day to day, you'll do a French press or something like that. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then with the espresso setup, because I went to visit a couple years ago now, but I think you had kind of just gotten it and you were, it's fun to visit because I know you'll have like good coffee, like interesting beans and potentially like, I mean, you take care of it and I'll drink. I mean, I enjoy good coffee, but I also want to make sure that I'm not the person, hopefully you're not this, I'm not the person where I'm like, oh, this hotel coffee is not going to do and I have to go somewhere else. I'm like, ah, you know what? Instant coffee, whatever, like whatever is in front of me, I'm not going to complain. I want to make sure I don't seem like an asshole because there's other stuff I do that probably does seem like an asshole. So I don't want it to be the coffee thing. So anyway, it's fun to visit and tell the espresso setup because there's a few people that will care a lot and know what you're talking about. I won't exactly know.
I have a Ranchillo Silvia. Which is an Italian, it's like an entry level prosumer model kind of thing. I got it because there's a highly active like mod community online and I thought that might be interesting to like mess around with. So like adding like a PID controller to it to automate some of the brew times and stuff like that, I thought could be cool. And so, yeah, that's what I have. It's a single boiler setup and semi-automated, I guess.
Okay.
I don't know.
Cool.
I don't know the like technical term for like what it is. It's not fully manual and it's not fully automatic. So I'm going to call it semi-automatic.
Okay, cool. And did it deliver like what you expected? Because I mean, like at the level that you're talking about, like any hobby, like you're getting to the point where like it's sophisticated enough where people can do mods that are more advanced that probably mimic like a much more expensive machine.
Yeah.
So like, did this fulfill the need that you were?
Yeah. So before I had this, I had like a $150 whatever thing from probably Bed Bath & Beyond. And so like, what are you paying for with more expensive coffee equipment? You're paying for better temperature control, right? Because like virtually all, anything that you look around that's like heating, like doing any kind of modulation of heat, like your air conditioning or like a space heater in your room or a coffee machine, like it's really just an on-off switch. It's just like, turn anything on, turn it off, turn it on, turn it off. And so anything, your oven, right? It's going to like cycle around, like you said, at 350, it's actually going to cycle around that number. The more expensive equipment does a better job at keeping those cycles closer to the number that you want. So for coffee, that means like you can make small tweaks and understand that the changes that you're tasting are a result of your actions and not just like randomness from the machine because you happen to catch it on the high cycle or the low cycle or whatever.
Yeah. Or like the whatever, something was running in the house, so the voltage was different. So it was like acting a little different.
Yeah.
And so funny thing, like I went over, had that stuff and you have this, there's a whatever the add-on controller that helps with the modulation that you were talking about, right? Like that's exactly what it is?
Yeah, that's what it does.
And I was like, hey, I know that company, Auber Instruments, and I'll give them a little shout out. So if you need temperature modulation, they're the folks that you go to. So if you're a big fucking nerd like Sam or myself, they have all kinds of different products that do that for different purposes. So I have a temp controller, an external thermostat and temp controller for my electric smoker that literally takes care of the issue that you just described because it had a old just potentiometer cycles on that temp, but it'll go whatever. It's like 75 degrees swing. Who knows? I mean, it's a cheap little part and I got the controller. I opened it up. And I just took the switch, the potentiometer, the switch out of that, and then hooked it up to my Auber Instruments temp controller. So it's plugged in to the wall. Basically, the heating element is always on, and the cycling comes from the Auber instruments. Yeah, yeah. So it will dial it in, and you could see like it cycle it. And it, so when you program it, it's like locked in on that temp.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it's not, it's cycling multiple times a second or something like that. It's extremely accurate, way more accurate than I need.
Yeah.
But very impressive.
Yeah. That was a nice upgrade. Without it, people, you can go online and people will talk about like temperature surfing, where like, because the thing shows you when the heater is on, like an orange light comes on. So they'll be like, all right, you wait to pull your shot until 2 seconds after the light turns off or whatever it is. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm into coffee, but I don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you ever get into roasting your own beans? Mm-mm. Which sounds like a weird euphemism. Did you ever roast your own beans? It's like, sometimes, but
yeah,
it's only when I travel and stay in a hotel by myself.
It's been a while. No, I haven't done that. I know people that have done it, and without exception, they're like, eh.
Oh.
I haven't met anyone that's like, I roast my own beans, and boy, am I glad that I have done so.
Oh. When I did it, I was like, this is really good.
Yeah.
But I don't care as much right now, but it was like super fresh and very good. But yeah, I guess I didn't get into it as much. I mean, there's so much good coffee out there that you can get it quite fresh.
I was wondering if it's just like a freshness issue.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess you can get really high quality beans that you may not have access to. And if you get super into it, I mean, you can obviously make your own blends based on those beans, but I think maybe more people got into it. I feel like maybe the green beans are not as cheap as they used to be, although I haven't looked in a long time, but coffee got a lot more expensive. Have you seen the prices go up in the last year and a half or whatever?
In fact, so I used to do like a coffee order thing where I joined some
Coffee of the month kind of thing.
And they would send me special beans every, I think I was getting them every 10 days or something, because that's
okay.
How quickly I was going through it. But yeah, like I was talking about paying attention to our budget a little bit. I was like, the coffee budget is going up. And Christy doesn't drink coffee. It's only me. I was like, I guess I'll stop with this thing.
Yeah.
So I still buy like locally roasted bean. Like I'm not getting like Folgers or whatever. I'm getting stuff from local shops. But it's just coming from the grocery store now and not being shipped from who knows where.
Do you roughly know how much per pound or whatever 12-ounce bag or whatever you're paying?
15.
Okay.
Probably plus or minus. It's probably closer to 17.
Okay.
Plus or minus $3.
Gotcha. Super interesting, because like probably a couple of years ago, that it would have only been like maybe 11 or 12 bucks.
Yeah.
Like it's gone up a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of surprising. Like, again, I try not to be too fussy. Like, occasionally I'll get a nice bag, especially if we're on vacation or something like that. But typically I'm getting, there's a local Denver roaster, Boyers, and they have it at Sam's. Mm-hmm. So I'll get like the 2 or 2 pound bag. And it's like, I mean, I think it used to be like 18 bucks and now it's like 24 or something. I mean, significant. It's only a few bucks, but like when you see it, I'm like, oh, wow.
That's
a lot.
Like I said, I'm the only one that's drinking coffee in the house. There's a local roaster out of Charlottesville, but they carry it in Costco. Nice. And so we'll get like a 2 pound bag of that stuff.
Gotcha.
That makes me happy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good to get I assume it's a little bit fresher than if I get like Starbucks or whatever, even if it's the same price. Yeah. And I mean, depending on what you're getting, like Starbucks. What do you think of Starbucks beans?
I like their light roast, the blonde.
Yeah, me too. It's pretty good.
A lot better than anything else.
Yeah. And I like a decently strong cup myself, but I'm not into the super darker roast. I mean, it's fine, I think.
Yeah.
If that's what you need or want.
But they roast it dark because it's easier to make espresso drinks out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if I have somebody over that I want to try to impress, like I'm not trying to do like a light roast with the espresso machine unless I've practiced and dialed it in, and I have done that before.
Oh, you have practice. Yeah. You're like, I gotta get like,
such and such is coming over. All right,
did you practice when I was coming over? I was like, because I like a light roaster. Just say yeah. Probably. Yeah. I mean, you wanted to impress me.
Well, the problem I think is that I practiced so much that I used up all those beans.
They're all gone. Yeah.
But that's part of the fun of it. I really enjoyed like that coffee of the month thing. You would get different beans. Like I said, it was like every 10 days. And they're all their own like special little snowflake. So dialing in the espresso for a particular bean and a particular drink that you wanted was fun for me.
How would you vary it? Is it temperature? Is it, yeah, I won't fill in the blank. Yeah, how would you vary it?
Yeah, you would vary the grind first to sort of dial in roughly, and then you would change temperature.
Okay.
Yeah. I guess there are four things that you can, that are variable. Temperature, time, pressure, grind size. Yeah. I can't change the pressure on my machine, and most machines you can't. Sort of a constant. There's like manual special machines. There's an Italian, word that's like, it means like la mano, the hand. The hand is one of the variables. I don't fool with temperature too much. I sort of just like set the machine at whatever, unless I'm like really struggling to get something. But so I'll change grind size and time.
Gotcha. It
takes within a small window.
Interesting. Pretty cool. Yeah, it's a fun hobby. I'm staying away from it. Seems like something I would go too deep into, but I'll taste your stuff.
Yeah.
Whatever.
It's got the same appeal as other hobbies that you and I have both dabbled in, which is like brewing beer and smoking meat, where it's like you're trying to accomplish a thing. Like small changes can have big impacts. What I like about coffee, as opposed to the other two things, is like the feedback is immediate. You don't have to wait weeks to like figure out whether like the thing that you were trying was a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That is a fun, it's interesting. Cause like I enjoy baking and like whatever bread and pizza. So it's like, you can test that. It's a little faster, but yeah, the coffee is just like, it's so fast to get into it.
Yeah.
So
yeah. It's like, oop, nope.
Yeah.
Let's change something.
So I think we've covered a lot, and I think we probably need to wrap it up here. I usually set a timer stopwatch so I can see how much time has elapsed, but who knows?
Rambled on about
who knows how long it is.
I would like to acknowledge that
yes,
these topics have been like a shared interest for many, many years. Like Christy and I like really bonded over watching like Food Network stuff.
Oh yeah.
And then you were there too, and we went to like Alton Brown shows and stuff.
Yeah.
When we were in Atlanta.
Yeah, because I was like, we can record a podcast, because we also enjoy. You told me about a podcast called Omnibus a few years ago, and it was a slow burn, but I ended up like getting into it quite a bit.
Yeah.
And
hi, John.
Yeah, maybe you're watching now. And yeah, so it was like, we can record. And yeah, so basically this was like half the stuff that we talked about earlier. I'm like, of course we could record a podcast.
Yeah.
could do a whole show.
Much better than my other idea, which was to tell you about the origin of the names of the days of the week.
Which is, I mean, that could be super interesting to someone, but.
Yeah, today is Odin's Day.
Which is?
Wednesday.
Wednesday, of course, of course. So this was great. And actually I was telling Elizabeth, I was like, I remember talking to Christy. I was in my dorm at Georgia Tech and talking to Christy. She was going to a different school at the time. And she was like, oh yeah, I went on a date with this guy who really likes the Food Network and Alton Brown. And I was like, sounds like a winner to me.
Yeah.
Huge nerd also. Check.
Yeah.
So thanks for joining me. Really fun. And you're off the grid. Do you want people to follow you anywhere at all? No?
No.
Cool. Yeah, maybe we'll record something again in the future. I often have recording gear when I'm traveling around, but I don't want to like mess up the hangout, but we had open time today and it worked out perfectly. Yeah, no,
this is fun. I've not done anything like this before, so it was
yeah, great. You did a fine job. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. About whatever, 15 years ago, I was in Charlottesville visiting you and your wife, my sister, and we were eating dinner someplace, having a couple beers, and I was like, how many books do you guys read? So I was sitting with you and your friend, Jeff, right? You guys are both PhDs, and I was like, these guys are way smarter than me. Curious how much you read. So you read a lot. You're an avid reader. Talk about that.
I am an avid reader. I read a lot for my job, which is exclusively nonfiction scientific material. So at home, I read exclusively fiction and fantasy books. In fact, the socks I'm wearing right now, my sister gave me, and they say dragons and wizards and shit.
Nice.
Because that's the kind of books I read. And I read a lot of them. Yeah. Probably fewer now that I have like kids and other time commitments, but two or three books a month probably still get through.
Which is, I mean, still solid. I mean, a lot. Yeah, those tend to be long. You're a fast reader.
Yeah, yeah. I finished one on the plane over here this morning.
Dang. Yeah, and I think back then you were like, probably you're like over one per week. Mm-hmm. And that makes sense. I mean, you're a little bit busier now.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but you guys inspired me. So after that, I started reading more. And for a few years, I cut back maybe last year or so, but yeah, almost a book per week.
Nice.
I think shorter than, and I'm a kind of a slower reader. Uh-huh. It's not a race anyway. It's not a contest.
No.
Yeah. You guys got me going. And for a little while, I read a lot more maybe nonfiction. And then now I read mostly fiction. And I wouldn't say, it's not like garbage stuff, but it's kind of like pop fiction that reads fast in the equivalent of, you know, pop music.
Yep.
Which is still good. I mean, you end up learning the format and the beats of the story, which is not a bad thing if you find one that you like.
Yeah. Yeah. I think when you consume pop material, like books or movies or whatever else, like you can see the hand behind the curtain a lot easier, because it's like, oh yeah, they're just following the 3-act structure. And I know how that goes. I've seen it a million times. And so, yeah, one of my favorite things to do, which I think annoys my wife, is, we'll be watching a movie, a crappy movie. If it's a good movie, I'll shut up and watch the movie. But if it's a crappy movie, yeah, I'm like, what do you think the writer's room was like? Like, why are they making this choice?
Yeah.
Like, what are they doing here? And why didn't they do something more interesting? Yeah. And usually the answer is, I think, well, they're just going for the lowest common denominator. And this is what is the easiest thing to do and will sell the most. And
yeah.
they don't have to worry too much about it.
Yeah, we were just watching something and it was maybe a five-part series, a British show, and it was good. They were getting me hooked, but like maybe the first episode and the last one, I was not suspending disbelief well. And I'm like, come on, like, come on. Yeah. Like, how did someone not say, this is just kind of dumb? Like, obviously, if our whole plot relies on this one point, like, fix that thing. Yeah. That is dumb.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is no fun to watch.
No.
With someone doing that. So it was like, okay. I think Elizabeth was like, you don't have to watch it with me. Yeah. You know, I was going to share, I shared this with you. So if you're going to complain, then.
Yeah, yeah. We end up at the end of a lot of movies, Christy will be like, you didn't like that movie? I'm like, no, I did enjoy that movie, but I enjoy like picking it apart too. Yeah. Sometimes I'm like, I should have been a Hollywood editor. I think that would have been a script doctor or something.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? There's a old, you know, Paula Poundstone.
Yeah.
She's a comedian. She has a joke from forever ago where she's like, when you're watching something, no matter how dumb it is, like, you just know someone wrote that down on a piece of paper. They wrote it down on a piece of paper and they gave it to somebody else who read it. And like, no matter how dumb it is, that happened.
It does remind me of, did you watch Frasier? You watch Frasier?
Not too much.
No. Okay. We're going to love this story from the Frasier episode. I'll make it short. Frasier and Niles like went to a restaurant and they were picking it apart. And basically there's nothing better than going to a super awesome, whatever, 3-star Michelin restaurant and having a perfect meal. The only thing better is going there and having one thing wrong. So then you could pick it apart.
Yeah.
So I get it.
Yeah.
It's a thing.
Yeah. It's kind of our culture now too, right? Everything is like, you have to have some kind of hot take on it. So
yeah. I try not to.
That's not what I'm trying to do.
You just can't help it.
Yeah.
The one slightly related, we were listening to an audiobook during the last road trip. And if it's a good book, it was a Stephen King book. If it's a good book, I don't want to try to think about what's going to happen next because I want to go along for the ride. Mm. And Elizabeth, she wasn't enjoying it as much. And she's more inclined to think what is going to happen next and want to have a conversation in between chapters, which can sometimes ruin the book. Again, Elizabeth is also an avid reader. So like between the two of us, and same for you, right? You read so much. Good chance you're going to guess what's going to happen. And then it's like, oh, it kind of takes it away. There's some victory inside when you figure it out. But I don't know. Do you try to figure out stuff?
Not really. Sometimes I can't help it. And what I will do is I'll tell Christy like what my guess is. I'm like, hey, I'm reading this book. I'm halfway through. I just want to like put it on the record. Like, this is my guess for what's going to happen.
Okay.
And then by the end of the book, she doesn't care. but I just want to like have it on the record somewhere.
Yeah.
And then I'll tell her like, yeah, I was right. Or no, I was way wrong or whatever.
Yeah. And that is fun when you're slightly keeping score.
Yeah.
Somehow. At least it's like I figured it out. Yeah.